Hey, thanks, Kara. Appreciate that. And only you would say it's on sale today. just had to throw that in there. Well, welcome back to Tech Radio. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions you have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have Mac guru Joel Brovelite. We also have on the line, we have Exigent Solutions Security Officer Amos Aesop, and from the Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick today. So we have those folks to answer your questions. You can call, text, tweet, or email your questions today. I'll tell you how in just a second. Or simply swing by facebook.com/techradio and post your comment or question there. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604, at KentSDPB is the Twitter handle, and our email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, midday, at sdpb.org. If you want to send us a text, that's 3681NPR or 3681677. Jeff Litterick, I'm going to start with you today. We had an email, let me get this pulled up here, from Joe in Vermilion. A couple of weeks ago, he started getting an error. He attached a screenshot for us that I believe you have that talks about an exception not handled and an NTFS.sys file that failed. But you dug a little deeper, and he's actually got a couple of different problems, doesn't he?
Well, he could have multiple problems. This is one of those very serious, critical type of errors he's getting where it's non-recoverable, so the whole machine has to stop. And just from the timing and stuff, he's already kind of cleaned his machine out, verified the fans and stuff. A lot of people would assume it's an overheating issue. It could actually be, just from the messages you get, also an NVIDIA driver issue he's getting. But the kind of key one is he's also getting a hard drive failure kind of message. So I'm wondering if his hard drive, is it starting to have problems of failing or going to sleep and not coming out because it's having issues. I would probably start there because you can download sort of free utilities. I use HTTune. There's other ones out there that will read the smart data off the hard drive. The hard drives actually do quite a bit of self-diagnostics and have for quite a while. And if you have a program, it can read that diagnostics and tell you if your hard drive is getting close to failure, if it's starting to have problems, and also the temperature of the hard drive and status. Now, the program I use has both a free and pay version. You just need the free version. It's called HD, capital letters, and then Tune. And then what it will do is it'll give you a green, yellow, or red light. If it's yellow or red, your hard drive is having issues and needs to be replaced. And you should probably back up immediately before you lose the hard drive. It also works somewhat with SSDs and stuff, if the SSD is starting to have write problems, which they have over time. But his computer is 7 years old, so it's probably still a hard drive-based system.
Okay.
If that's not it, and he does update his NVIDIA drivers and stuff, which he should, they just had a new release this week, in fact, with some security enhancements, he might be looking at a motherboard-type issue, which is not easy to diagnose or repair. It's probably a heat-related issue as it heats up over time because at cold boot, it always starts up. And I've seen hard drives do this too. I actually had a hard drive that failed after it warmed up. It would start having errors and stuff and slow down and read errors and stuff like that until it finally would blow up entirely. So it could be the hard drive. That's what I kind of suspect from the error. If not, you're probably looking at a motherboard issue. Could be memory, but more than likely, just from the different variations, probably something in the motherboard itself.
Yeah, so that was the part that I left out of the conversation earlier from the email. It says the problem never occurs until they've been using the unit for some period of time, several hours it seems. So that fits right in with what you said about getting warmed up and using it for a while and then the failure. So
yeah, it doesn't actually have to overheat to have those types of problems. Some people have that misconception. Hard drives especially fail because of heat. Hard drives are very susceptible to heat. That's why I kind of use that tool to monitor my hard drive temps to keep them as low as possible. Every degree Celsius or 3 degrees of Celsius hard drive actually takes months off the hard drive life. Heat kills hard drives. So it doesn't have to overheat, but over time as stuff wears in, just the act of heating up, that expansion can cause issues, especially in hard drives and motherboards.
Excellent. Well, we'll get that link to HD Tune out on Facebook for Joe and the others. If you want to see that error, Joe screenshotted the error for us, which was great. I love the sideways, upside down smiley face thing that is the error now on the newer versions of Windows. It's kind of funny to see. It's not a funny thing when it happens to you, but it's humorous, I guess, the way that they're showing you that there's an error. But I put his photo out there on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. If you'd like to see that and then get the link, I'll post that up a little bit later in the show today as well. Jeff, while I have you, and I didn't want to forget this today because we talk security a lot on the show, and there seems to be some router upgrades that need to happen to firmware this week. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, especially if you're using a Netgear home router, you definitely want to go get updates. In fact, I saw one recommendation not to buy Netgear right now until everything is fully patched out. Not everything is actually fully patched, so you're going to want to actually be paying attention over the next few weeks to make sure any firmware updates come out for your router to patch them. But what's happening is, as you know, we talked about this in the past, as kind of an arms race between hackers and security stuff, as Windows and the OSs have gotten harder, the hackers have moved on to softer targets. First, some smartphones, especially Android, but that's gotten kind of hard to do now. So they're moving on and on, right? The latest, biggest one is video cameras, security video cameras. Everyone's buying them. They worked, there were a couple of brands that were not secured very well, so people actually took them over and used them to do DDoS attacks on other people because they could compromise 10 million cameras and have them send out bad data to a target to overwhelm them. And what you're going to hear a lot in security is the IoT, the Internet of Things. And a lot of those things going out, those little things you hook up between your refrigerator that takes pictures to show you what's in stock and all that stuff, they are computers, just like any other computer. They can be hacked. They can be used for bad stuff. And those types of things, like your TV, your refrigerator, don't usually get updated as often, or that security camera, unless you go out, or your router, as you were kind of mentioning before. All of these devices, you don't think to patch like you do your Windows boxes. Windows boxes patch automatically now. Your routers and Internet of Things do not patch automatically. Some TVs now patch automatically because of security issues in the past, but not all of them. I mean, even my Blu-ray player on the network get security updates occasionally, and you do have to apply them when it prompts you to.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do not do that. It's kind of those things. It's important to patch anything that talks to any kind of network just as much as you patch your main computer or your laptop or even your tablet when Apple brings out its updates. It's just as important to update all of them. The problem is most of them are not auto-updated, and you actually have to go looking for stuff. Well, and that's what's happened to a lot of routers.
Yeah, you forget about that little guy working away, and you may have even forgot how to log into it.
Right. I mean, you set it up maybe 2-3 years ago, and you kind of forgot about it, right? It just works.
You're right.
Actually, most routers have firmware updates probably once every 2 months. Even my almost 5-year-old Asus router is still getting security updates every few months that I apply, and feature upgrades also, which makes it really worthwhile to do those upgrades because it tends to improve your wireless, especially for different devices. As new devices come out, any incompatibilities are fixed in new firmware updates. So it's very important that you keep all your devices updated. Your router being kind of on the internet without any protection at all is very, very important. Because it's like any other computer, there's always hackers finding new ways, and they're looking for the easiest route to hack. And people don't update their routers, and everybody has a router. So lots of devices out there, and once a hack is known, very easy to hack and find those routers. There's no firewall protections or anything blocking them, like maybe your computer. So, it's very important to patch everything.
And for folks at home that may not really understand what we're talking about here, the logging into the router is typically done with your browser. and it's a web address you log into, and it's usually like a 192.168.1.something or other. And there's usually an admin and a password there. And depending on the brand, and if you have changed the default, you'll need to know what that is to get into it to do the update. And I've noticed on my ASUS, Jeff, that it starts acting pretty hinky. And I'll go and I'll say, hey, maybe there's an update. And then there's usually an update. And it usually clears it up. So.
And I will say many of the newer routers, like my ASUS, and if you buy a new router now, one of the nice features the old routers do not have, the ones that are being hacked right now, is they actually go out and kind of check. So if you log into the router, it'll usually tell you if there's a firmware update that needs to be applied.
Yes.
In the olden days, in the older routers, you actually have to go to your manufacturer's website, go to support and downloads, look up your router model. Be careful, because some router models change over the years. They change the internals, so keep the same number in different revs. So make sure you match exactly what your router is. Go find it, download it to your computer, then log in, upload it, and update. It's kind of a big, cumbersome process. Many of the newer routers, especially the top lines, do that automatically for you. You just have to click a button when you log in, but they still don't update automatically. You have to log in, see that there's an update, and then click on the button to update. So it is important to check every once in. Right now, there's a lot of attacks going on and a lot of routers being hacked. So like I said, the next 4 or 5 weeks, make sure you're checking pretty consistently for any firmware update, especially if you have a Netgear router.
One of the more creative that I thought was an interesting attack that's been happening is, and I don't know if you've heard of this, the malvertising, they call it. So the browser gets the advertisement, and there's a script or there's something that runs that checks to, it actually pings out another web address and checks the IP address of where the browser is, and if it looks like it's a home address, like looks like it's not a corporate type thing, it proceeds with the attack. If it looks like it's a corporate type of a infrastructure, it just serves up an ad to the browser. But if it looks like a home, it tries to log into your router using the standard passwords that, like I said, you need to change when you put a router in. But it uses the default passwords for different routers to try to get into into the router of your house, and then will infect your router. And that's above and beyond. That's crazy.
Yeah, most routers, when you can almost always override this, which I recommend you never, ever do, will not allow remote administrative access from outside, meaning from the Internet. You have to be on the wireless, and in fact, in some cases, you have to actually be connected by Ethernet, wired into the router to be able to log into it on some of the really older ones. So what they've done is they use your browser to hack it because you're already on the inside of the network,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's something, because also usually fixable if you keep your router upgraded. Most of the routers nowadays know about this, and there's sort of protections built into them. But if you don't keep your firmware updated, you won't have those protections to block that type of attack. Another good thing, if you haven't made any change in your home network and suddenly your router starts acting weird, doing stuff, needs to be rebooted more often, outside of a hardware failure, it's almost always, if you haven't made any changes, you know, something's happened to that router, right? It's been hacked or through this type of attack or something else. This stuff usually doesn't change patterns unless there's a change. Now, so you do want to be kind of careful and just notice any patterns of behavior of your equipment. And that includes your TV and stuff, too, if it suddenly starts acting weird and there's been no changes and you haven't updated the firmware. Be cautious. Usually, almost all those attacks can be negated by just going and updating your firmware again to the newest and latest code, because they overwrite the hack that was put in. So that's usually your best solution, is if you keep updating as new firmware comes out, even if you do get hacked, hopefully it will wipe that out so when you do the upgrade.
Stay vigilant,
and then protect
folks.
You from being re-attacked.
Yep. Stay vigilant is, I guess, what that is. Amos, I, as long as we're on security, I've got one for you. I think you can answer this one. I had a question from a gentleman that wanted to know, he's been seeing a lot of advertising lately for antivirus programs for cell phones. And he's in particular interested in Android because that's what he carries. And you still have you're still on Android, correct? Or did you go? Did you switch over to Apple after you traded your Note in?
No, still on Android.
Okay.
Yep. Still have an Android.
So do you? You're a security consultant expert. Do you run antivirus on your phone?
I do not. I don't. And there's kind of conflicting ideas out there on the Android platform on antivirus. On one hand, antivirus just in general is good, right? We push it on almost every other platform, whether it's your desktop or your laptop or your Chromebook or, well, I guess not a Chromebook, but you know, any other platform that it would be on, we encourage you to have antivirus because antivirus does a good thing. It watches for malware. It watches for you know, things that you download that could infect your device, and it keeps you safe in a lot of instances. There's kind of a on the other hand, sort of thought that the problem is A, there's not a ton of malware out there, not like there is for your Windows boxes on the Android device, although it definitely is growing with the number of devices, you know, I mean, the Internet of Things, that's becoming the problem. But the other problem is that antivirus tends to be a resource hog. It tends to take up a lot of memory, a lot of CPU cycles, and can slow your phone down. And so you kind of have to weigh that. Now, in general, I would say antivirus, you know, it's a good thing. And there's plenty of them out there. You can go out there and find them. There's plenty of free ones. There's plenty of paid for ones. And you know, if you've got a particular favorite brand, you certainly can go with that. But kind of a rule of thumb is to make sure you stay away from sketchy downloads or sketchy installs. One of the security features on the Android platform is to not allow installs from anything but the Google Play Store. And in theory, Google Play should have vetted all the software that's on there, should have made sure there's nothing malicious, and then if there was something that were to get through, and it has happened, that it gets removed fairly quickly. And so hopefully you won't become infected with that. But it's not foolproof, and with the number of applications that are written constantly, you just never know. So I don't have antivirus. I also try to keep my installs to a minimum and only from applications or from software companies that I know and trust. It's pretty rare that I install a random application from like a single developer unless it's something that I've researched quite a bit. So that's really, you know, you got to walk that fine line of what's going to make your phone run well and perform well versus that security line. And, you know, if you're in doubt and you just don't know, find an antivirus, install it, and run it, and see if you get frustrated with it at all for performance, because they do vary as far as performance as well. So if you're on the line and you're just not quite sure, try it out. There's plenty of free ones out there to work with.
Have you ever run into an instance, I guess either Jeff or you or even Joel, have you run across a smartphone that's been hacked or been attacked with a virus?
I have not run across one in the wild. In other words, you know, somebody who I knew that had had a phone that was hacked, although we know in the security industry that a lot of times if you are hacked, it takes months or weeks or months to know about it. But I have seen it happen in practice in the lab sort of scenarios or when I was, you know, looking for things that could cause problems. I save all of my phones. I've got every phone that I've ever had, and I use a lot of them just for that sort of thing, where I can go out and install software to see what it does. And I've come across plenty of malware in that instance.
Okay.
I'll add on, and this is kind of both iOS and Android. iOS also has the same thing, that you can only install apps from the Apple Store. And as long as you don't turn off that feature on Android, both to only do Google Play, both phones are pretty safe. There are some SMS stuff that's happened over time, but that gets patched fairly quickly. That's outside of the App Store, but almost all malware outside of a few exceptions comes through downloads and app installs. So only install from, you know, trusted sources. And one thing I will mention, because I've actually been some security presentations and have gone deep dive, and this is even more on iOS than Android, is the antivirus doesn't work like it does on your PC. The way the phone OSs are architectured, especially iOS, because everything's encrypted, the antivirus can't actually see very much on the phone. It can see very basic stuff, and it is actually very easy for malware to hide from an antivirus. It's not nearly as effective a mechanism as it would you would think as a normal computer. Yes, can they pick up some stuff? Yes, but malware can pretty efficiently hide if it gets installed from any antivirus on either Android or iOS, especially iOS. And that would only change if either Google or Apple themselves put antivirus in, because both phones, for security reasons, keep all the hooks, the internal technical hooks that are required to be able to see other apps in memory that other apps are doing, only to the kernel, and no other app that you install can see that stuff, even antivirus stuff. So, yes, it can pick up some stuff, but I'll warn you, it's not nearly as effective as it is on a desktop, and you have the downside of it taking up a lot of CPUs and stuff. So,
and I would ask Joel if his opinion of antivirus on iPhones, and I think it's a fairly short response, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I've not heard of a virus for the iPhone. It is technically possible, but that doesn't mean that that they're out there. I haven't even actually done a search to see if there is antivirus software on the Apple mobile store. I wouldn't recommend it.
So you're just not that concerned about it, and that's
yeah.
So I understand that. Okay.
Yeah. Unless somebody comes to you and says you must install this because it's your job,
sure,
then I probably wouldn't do it.
Well, as we head into break here, I wanted to mention that Verizon was originally going to kill off the Note 7, so basically force a patch that would keep your phone from charging and updating and take away the cell service from it. That was originally going to happen, I think, before Christmas, and they're now going to do that the first week in January. So it's going to get people through the holidays, through the driving time. So if you haven't had the opportunity and you're holding on to that Note 7, you're going to want to go explore other options the first of the year, because they're going to patch that, or they're going to make it so the Note 7 is not going to work for you anymore. But we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk quite a bit about smartwatches and devices for Christmas, and some other last-minute gift ideas from the guys after this. And welcome back to Tech Radio. In our next segment, we have a question from Facebook, and the gentleman had a question about smartwatches. He wanted to pick one up for his wife for Christmas, and he actually pulled the trigger, made the decision on a Samsung Gear watch, and was kind of curious what we thought about that. And I turned to the only person that I know. Steve, you got a Gear? Okay, so the guy running the board in here's got a Gear, and I double thumbs up. I also talked to our director of engineering, who has a Gear watch, and he uses it kind of infrequently, but he loves it because it's got an extra SIM card, so it's just like another phone, really. He can leave if he's in a situation he doesn't want to carry his phone with him, he can strap his watch on and make calls and do texts and things like that, so he loves that, is a pro. His cons are it's bulky and big, and he didn't care for that. I think he had an earlier version. The new ones, Steve, are they a little bit more svelte? They are not more svelte. They still have that big battery. Okay, all right. Well, guys, I know, Jeff, you're into the Garmins. How's that working for you?
The Garmin has been really going great since I got it. It works well on Android. It also supports iOS, so in case I ever switch phones, it's not a problem. But it's been working well. And the nice thing is, even with all the features and high-end and GPS and tracking, constant tracking of sleep and activity and all the Bluetooth stuff, the battery, I mean, it's fairly small and compact, but the battery lasts well over a week. I'm only charging it about once every 8-9 days. Great battery life. I don't really have to worry about the battery. And it just works. I can't talk to it. It doesn't have its own cell stuff, but and it has good range. I mean, I can leave my phone upstairs in my house, walk in the basement to the computer, and it's still connected, and I'm getting alerts off the phone, even when the phone's, you know, a good 50, 60 feet away. So been very good with both my Droid Turbo 2 and the phone for the range on the Bluetooth, too. So been super happy.
Is the battery life excellent because it doesn't have all that radio gear in it? It's basically not a cell phone. It's just doing its own thing?
Yeah, that's going to be part of it. I mean, it does have the Bluetooth. And probably a lot of the bulk is the radio, the SIM, you know, just even to support a SIM card requires so much space. And cellular requires a lot more battery power. I mean, you could see that in your phones and stuff, how big the battery packs have to be in the phones. And that battery, almost all it does is feed the display and feed the cell radios, right? So especially if you get into low coverage areas and stuff like that, it actually has to put out quite a bit of power in relation to the battery in order to keep connection to a cell tower. So, you know, that's going to be part of it. And as Apple's kind of fighting with their FlexGate kind of stuff and Samsung with their Note 7, is there are limits on how small you can make that and still, you know, in the battery. It has to have so much space around it because as it expands, it heats up actually as it's being used and needs to expand and stuff. And that's why the Notes were catching a fire. There wasn't enough room. They tried to make it too small for that amount of battery life. So there are limitations physically in size if you want to have a battery big enough to actually last long and be able to do cellular type of activities.
And I wanted to mention, I was just re-reviewing my notes that I took when I was talking to him. And the part that he really loved about the Gear Watch was the apps. He said the apps all worked wonderfully, the health tracking apps. And really, it just a beautiful experience as far as the apps go. Really enjoyed that. Amos, were you a Pebble user? Am I remembering that right?
No, I never jumped on the Pebble bandwagon. I looked at them. I thought they were interesting, but I didn't think that when I looked at them, they were brand new, right? Just out of Kickstarter stage.
Yep.
And they for the price point they were at, I didn't feel they had enough functionality, but I knew that this was something that was going to evolve over time and that they'd get better, and they really did. And so the one that I ended up going with is the Huawei. Is how it's pronounced, however it's spelled, Huawei. And I don't get the battery life that Jeff gets. I get 2 days at most. And generally, I choose to charge mine every night. I've got a charger next to my bed, and I put it on the charger. But if I'm careful with it, I can get 2 full days out of it. But you know, there's lots of form factors out there. If you're looking to buy for one for somebody for Christmas, you know, depending on what their main purpose for it is, whether it's a Garmin or whether it's a, you know, something else that is ruggedized and meant for, you know, kind of urban exploring and really focused on GPS. Some of them are really focused on health. A lot of them have sort of you know, the ability to, or mine specifically, I guess, I bought because I feel like it really looks like a normal watch and doesn't stand out quite so much. I think that the square ones are a little more, you know, they look a little more techy. And so if that's something you're interested in, there's definitely those. And then there's the other ones, the kind of high-end manufacturers of luxury watches. They're getting in on this too, and you can, you know, you can get a Tag Heuer watch out there, a smart version, for $2,600. You know, it's very pretty, but I don't know that it does anything more. So
wow.
it really kind of depends on what you're doing. And then, you know, at the opposite end, there's the other ones, like the Fitbits or the Nike Fuels or whatever it is that happens that's just maybe tracking your fitness level and might have a watch on it as well. So there's lots of variation. In fact, I saw one, and take this for what it's worth, it was an advertisement on Facebook, but a special running for a low-end smartwatch for $30 yesterday. I forget the name of it. It was a brand name I'd never heard of. But so they run the gamut of 30 to the highest I've seen is 2,600. So.
Well, I'll tell you, getting back to the Pebble, they must have had really good engineers because Fitbit just bought the company, and the engineers are already overworking on Fitbit stuff. So they have said that they're going to support the Pebble watches through 2017. So yet another year with updates and things like that. But yeah, the engineering staff and everybody else is over working on the Fitbits now from Pebble. So little news for you for this Christmas season. If you're looking at a Pebble watch, you may want to, if you're planning on having it longer than a year and getting updates, you may there may be a good sale on them. I don't know. But take that to heart. There seems to be a lot of different watches out there. Joel, you're still loving the Apple Watch?
Yeah, you bet.
What's your favorite thing about it?
What do I use it the most for? That's a good question. I probably use it the most to respond to and read texts. That's probably what I use it the most for. Although I should say I also use it a lot to locate where I put my phone in the room. Actually, everybody in my family does that, so that's a very important feature, I have to say. It's nice to be able to, actually, this happened last night when I went to a movie last night, and I went to the concession stand, and I noticed on my watch that I didn't have my phone with me, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So I went back and grabbed my phone where I had set it down, so it's kind of useful for that as well.
Oh, so
but, of course, you can use it for lots of stuff. So.
Keeping track of your big phone.
Absolutely.
So we've got, I guess, three different panelists on the day, and you're all using a completely different smartwatch, but you're all using smartwatches, which is interesting. They were supposed to be the hot item last year for Christmas, and certainly I've even had family members this year talking about getting the Fitbits or something similar, or doing some exercise watches, and I guess I see them around more. Out shopping or at the grocery store or whatever, I am seeing them in the wild more than just strapped to nerds, I guess. is that's where you only used to see them. So, interesting that there are so many products and a good price range and that it's really kind of category based. Do you want it for fitness? Do you want it for is your personal assistant? Is it going to be another phone for you? I guess you've got a lot of questions to answer for yourself before you buy one, but certainly for a gift, you're going to need to know a little bit more about the person and what they want to use it for before you actually make the purchase. So interesting discussion today. Other gift ideas, guys. We have a few minutes left in the show. Have you been buying tech gifts for your family or friends, Joel? And if so, what?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're getting a gift from me, it's likely that it's going to have to be plugged in at some point. So, if you're talking about gifts that I would recommend,
yes.
I hinted at this at the last show. I would, if you've got a tech person, you're looking for something to buy, look into a 3D printer. And that sounds really ridiculous, but they are just so much fun to play with and pretty darn useful. And now they're ranging in prices from, $200 to $1,000. So for most people, a pretty affordable device. I just can't say enough about how much I've used the one that I have since I got it, about 10 times more than I thought, and it's about 10 times more reliable than I thought it was going to be, too. So I would definitely recommend that. And every year, I have to get in that I would recommend getting Clear Screen, KLEAR, I think is how you spell it. Clear Screen. It's just a spray that you can get in a bottle that to clean your displays, whether it's a laptop or your phone. I use it for my glasses. It lasts forever. In fact, I brought my bottle here that I've had for over 8 years. So, good gift, under $20 easy. I think you can get it online. I think you can get it some places locally, too, in Sioux Falls. So check that out.
Excellent. Jeff Litterick, what's on your Christmas list this year? I imagine is it Battlefield 1, or are you more into the Assassin's Creed, or what are you looking for?
Actually, the game that just came out this week is I've been having the most fun with this whole Christmas season. But I'm a big Warhammer 40,000K fan, which is dating me back to tabletops and stuff like that. And a little-known first-person shooter came out called Deathwing, Space Hulk, as that's set in that universe. And for the price, it's one of those titles that's not super expensive, but it's actually really good and really fun. So you know, for the gamers in your life, a Steam gift card is really good. And don't forget, this year, you now have the new Xbox and PlayStation consoles out there that support 4K gaming. So if you have a 4K TV or you're planning to get one, an upgrade, which it's basically just an upgrade of the existing Xbox One and PlayStation 4, but they will play games in 4K resolution with the higher quality color. So that's a good upgrade because you don't have to buy any new software. You just upgrade the console. But if you don't have a 4K, I would recommend you do not buy the newer, more expensive ones because that's the only difference between them is the 4K television support. So.
Okay. And I just want to back up. You said a Steam gift card, and folks might not know what that is. So Steam is a gaming platform, and it is it thousands of titles? That run through Steam?
Oh, with their community stuff they have now where they have indie developers, it numbers probably close to 1 million.
Oh, my.
Different things on the platform. And they actually have some productivity stuff. They actually have utilities, like graphic card utilities you can manage through Steam. And Steam, it's just more than a game platform. It's actually a whole kind of software distribution model, in which you have a client, and then you can go out there and you can buy, or some of it's actually free. Some of the indie games and like the EVGA graphic utilities are totally free to get, and you can download them and manage them, and they update automatically through Steam. So mm-hmm. It takes a lot of the management of your software off your hands because you don't have to worry about it. You just log into Steam, and all your software is just there. And they do offer gift cards. Steam is mostly known for, you know, the top-end games. There's not a PC game that's out that really isn't on Steam. Now, there's also a competitor called GOG, which specializes in a lot of older games and stuff and a lot of free games that are older if you'd like to play your old 1990 computer titles and stuff like that, if you really want to go back in time. But Steam has a lot of that stuff, too. So it's not always about paying top dollar and discounts, and Steam is usually pretty good on pricing and sales. They have these massive sales many times a year. But you also get a lot of free stuff there too. So a Steam gift card is one of those things that then they can pick the game they really want because there's just so many games coming out anymore. So
yeah, if your friend or your family or you are the kind that likes to, I guess, hop around and try different games, Steam's a great way to do that, and a gift card and having some money in a Steam account so that when there is that flash sale, so if it's, let's say, 70, 80, 90% off of a title and you just want to try it, and, you know, if it's just a couple of dollars, you may not want to just try it if it's more than 20, but if it's a couple of bucks, you might want to try it. It might be worth it to you. It's handy to have a couple extra bucks in an account or, you know, if a skin for a rifle on CSGO goes on sale or something. I don't know. You just want to pick something up. It's a Steam gift card. I never even thought about that. That would be a great idea for folks. Amos? Yeah, go ahead.
And I've seen those Steam gift cards at Walmart and other retailers. You don't actually have to go online and get them through Steam if you don't want to. You can, like the Google Play cards and stuff where you can buy apps or iTunes cards and Apple Store. Wherever they sell those cards, there will be Steam cards there too. So
I did not realize that. That's a great idea. Amos, coming to you next. Either what's on your list this year for Amos, or have you picked something up for somebody else that you can talk about on the radio today?
Well, Kent, have I mentioned how much I'm hoping you're going to get me a 65-inch 4K TV? I'm really looking for that next time we see each other at USF there. I think that's really one of the things. That's, you know, there was a time where you had the chicken and egg issue of buying a 4K TV but not having anything to put on it or anything to watch in that format, and that's going away rather quickly. So 4K TVs are an excellent gift idea, you know, jumping off of what Jeff was saying earlier. And then for me, for the longest time, and we've talked about this in the show a number of times, you know, I was I jumped on the bandwagon of the Amazon Echo. Had it real early, you know, pre-ordered it, and for the longest time I was saying I still don't know what to do with this thing. But now there there's enough of them out there, there's enough of demand that they're starting to integrate with some high-end other devices that are available in your house, and you don't necessarily have to cobble together an if-this-then-that recipe. And if you're not familiar with that, just Google if-this-then-that. But one of my favorite ones that's coming up is an integration with Sonos. And Sonos is a wireless audio system for your house, and I really like those. I got hooked on that by starting with one little tiny one, and then I put another one in a bathroom, and now all of a sudden my whole house is filled with them, and it'll be great when my Echo is able to control that just through voice commands and natively through voice commands, so it'll work really well and you'll be able to have full functionality. On top of that, then, now what has to happen is my Echo is sitting in the kitchen, and maybe from my bedroom it can't hear me. So now I've got another one. I've got a Dot that I put in my bedroom, so I can use that to control as well. So it really starts to become technology sprawl after a while. Mm-hmm. But they're systems that are starting to integrate really well. They're systems that are starting to work for the average consumer, and you don't have to be a techie nerd to cobble them together or make them work. And so I think these are starting to hit prime time, and they're coming down in price too. I think the last time I saw an Amazon Echo, it was like at $130 instead of $200 when they first came out. So again, you have to have an Amazon Prime membership for that, but that seems to be fairly common these days anyway.
Makes me wonder if on the Google side they've got the Home, and they're getting into that mesh networking, if they just start incorporating that. So you plop down these routers in different parts of your house, and they automatically have that kind of built in. That'd be kind of wild. Hey, go ahead.
Oh, I think that's actually a confirmation that voice activated or voice integration with things is coming into prime time. The fact that Echo was out there all by itself, kind of a niche market, people saying, what do I do with this thing? All it does is tell me jokes or tell me the time or the temperature. But now we're starting to see that competition coming in, and the fact that Google put engineering into it, it shows that they feel there's a future in it, there's a market in it, and that competition is going to drive that pricing down, and it's also going to drive integration with all the other technology in your house.
Yeah, and I just have to say, Donna, we had a question about a Paperwhite e-reader, and I'm going to have to take that offline and answer that on Facebook, or you can drop me an email, but I have some comments on that. That is unfortunately all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my panelists today. Jeff Litterick, thank you so much. Amos Aesop and Joel Brovelite, thank you guys for taking your time out of the day today.